Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is Thursday, September 24th. We can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us. Hope you and your family are well and that you've had a great week so far. Do want to remind you that you can find the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are available. Stitcher, Spotify, the podcast app on your iPhone, however you choose to listen. We ask that you do listen, subscribe, review, give us feedback on what you think about the show, and let us know if you'd love any content covered. We always want to make sure that our content meets our listeners' preferences. Also want to remind you of our title sponsor, rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. Visit rockauto.com today. So today's episode is going to be a continuation of a little bit of a rivalry week when it comes to the Grizzlies. On Tuesday, we spoke with Locked On Rockets host Jackson Gatlin about the Rockets offseason. Yesterday, we spoke with Locked On Spurs host Jeff Garcia about the Spurs offseason. And today, I'm glad to welcome a very knowledgeable mind of another Southwest rival. This time, it's host of Locked On Pelicans and also the Wednesday host of the Locked On NBA podcast, Jake Madison. Jake, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here and talking some basketball.
It's awesome to do that. You know, the thing about it is that we're talking about it. You know, typically right now, Jake, is, you know, you've known, and I know that you had said you've been covering the Pelicans in various ways for, you know, nearly a decade. But, you know, typically this time of year, we're previewing the season, you know, getting ready for the start of the NBA season. But right now, I know you particular, you're kind of commenting on, you know, the winding down of the season, the NBA Finals. We'll get your thoughts on that. What do you think of the NBA playoffs so far? We've seen some surprises. How do you think the games are going right now in the bubble?
It's fun. Like the game the other night between game three between the Lakers and Nuggets was like awesome. That's kind of exactly what you want to see. You saw a furious comeback by the Lakers. You saw the Nuggets respond in kind to close the door on that team to at least make this a series rather than go down 3-0. You're seeing stellar play from like top guys. You're seeing really interesting X's and O's and adjustments made by the coaches. It's just so much fun to watch. It's like top quality basketball that we don't always get, and we're getting it right now. So I'm thrilled about it. Like, I don't know when people are listening to this show, but I am so excited for Celtics Heat game four because that is such a chess match. And if you're like a hoops junkie, a hoops nerd, or anything like that with this, these games are so intriguing to watch because there are so many things going on in all of them right now.
Agreed. And that's the other thing is that, you know, you probably have noticed over the past few years, especially when it was consistently the Warriors versus LeBron and LeBron getting to the finals. You know, we're looking at LeBron being in the finals potentially 9 out of the last 10 years if the Lakers prevail. But for a lot of these playoffs, I think one of the things that was hurting viewership at times was you would see blowouts. Like, yeah, you'd see some close games, but you'd also see a lot of blowouts. With the Nuggets and the Heat especially, with their style of play and the upsets that they've pulled off, it seems like every game is right down to the wire. And so I think the NBA playoffs product has certainly benefited from the surprise upsets that you've seen so far. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have more unpredictability, I think is only going to benefit ratings and the audience. You don't want to tune in for something that's going to be a foregone conclusion. But when you get upsets, when you get surprises, and the Denver Nuggets are a great example of this, it becomes much watched TV because you don't know what's going to happen in it. And particularly in both of these series that are going on right now, you know, with the Lakers coming back from double digits the other night, you've seen the Heat down double digits in all three of their games so far. And all of these have come down to being close. That's a wonderful thing that teams are able to come back to it, whether it's just they're not traveling, so they're well rested, so they can make these runs more. It means every game's kind of in the balance. And I love that. This game, I did a radio spot before coming on with you where I got asked who's going to win game four of Celtics and Heat. And like, I want to come in with like a fiery hot take of like who it's going to be and why. This game is such a chess match and it's such a toss up in my opinion that I have literally no idea what's going to happen and who's going to win. And I can't wait to watch that unfold because that's exciting.
Yeah. And that's the other thing about it is that, you know, you don't know what to expect. And I think the reason why is because, you know, when you look at the teams like the Heat and like the Celtics, there's so many different facets. I'm not saying they're better than the Lakers, but the way in which they have success, You have it in different ways. With the Boston, you've got a bit of top-heavy approach, and then they've got some decent bench players. With the Heat, it's the quality of their depth and the three-point shooting. And so I think another thing you could say from these playoffs, Jake, is that you now have gotten proof that different methods of team building, with you covering the Pelicans and me the Grizzlies, you know, that's kind of important to us as we're continuing to try to, you know, see our rosters get rebuilt. But you're now seeing different ways in which you can have success doing it. That's another positive takeaway, I would think, from the playoffs this year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, you're seeing the league be the least homogenous, like the least amount of parity kind of that we've ever seen, which is actually a very, very good thing, I think, because you're seeing different styles of play. You're seeing different approaches to team building. The Lakers do their Lakers thing. They bring in stars. That's how they build a really good team. That's great right there. There's no problem with that, and I'm not trying to argue that one's better than the other. You also then have the Denver Nuggets, who did it really slowly and incrementally, but without tanking, right? They didn't dismantle a team, get really, really bad, stockpile top draft picks in hopes that one or two of them work out, all of the process with the Sixers. They just made smart decision after smart decision after smart decision over a number of years to build up to where this team's now in the Western Conference Finals and looks really good. You know, Jamal Murray was 7. He wasn't a top 2 or 3 pick, the number 1 overall pick. It says what they've done as they've built that team up. It's in stark contrast to the Lakers. It's in stark contrast to other teams that we've seen too that take that teardown approach, but then build up and get into the playoffs and being competitive. So you're seeing a number of different ways to build the team. You're seeing a number of different play styles. You're seeing zone defense, which has been a big thing throughout all of this too, which is kind of fun. Like, this is just the most varied NBA I think we've seen in a really long time.
And that's the great thing about it, is that because of there being different ways, you know, in markets such as New Orleans and Memphis, you have more experience than this, you know, with this than ever. You know, obviously with Anthony Davis last year, those markets may not be as attractive as like the LAs and Bostons and New Yorks and all that. So now seeing that it can really pay off to develop your roster and develop through the draft, it really is encouraging. And that's, of course, you know, what the Grizzlies and the Pelicans are looking at. So let's get in to our team. So, you know, obviously the big discussion this year, one of the big storylines that's involved Memphis and New Orleans, obviously, is the relationship and the rookie rivalry between Ja Morant and Zion Williamson. Jake, I think that it's pretty easy to say that right now, Zion Williamson is the most impactful rookie talent that's out there. But I do think that Ja Morant has certainly exceeded what many expected for his ceiling to be going forward. But my question to you is this. We know on the Memphis side how we feel about things. People want to try to create a rivalry, and there is one. But between Ja and Zion with their background, they seem to be more than friends than foes. What is it on the New Orleans side? How do New Orleans Pelicans fans and those that cover the team feel about Ja Morant and the debut season that him and the Grizzlies have had?
So I take a bit of a different approach than maybe some of the other like blogger media, of which I consider myself a part of, is in. I really like Ja Morant. I like what we've seen out of him. And like, look, as much as, again, I'd like to come in and be like, Zion should have been rookie of the year. He shouldn't have been. It should have been Ja Morant. And frankly, it's kind of wrong that Morant only got, 99 out of the 100 votes, and it wasn't unanimous, I think. Or maybe it was, I can't remember. Maybe it's the first team stuff, but
It was one off.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought. Like, that's stupid, right? Like, that's annoying because it should have been unanimous. It should have been unanimous that he was rookie of the year. And so I think his future is really bright. Like, that team exceeded my expectations. I do think that Pelicans fans are a little bit petty. And after all the stuff they've gone through with, you know, Chris Paul about 10 years ago or so now, then Anthony Davis, you know, there's a lot of hope pinned on Zion, which creates a lot of hatred towards his natural rival in Ja Morant, even if it's not really deserved. So Pelicans fans can be a little bit petty at times. So I think they're kind of enjoying making fun of the Grizzlies fans in Ja Morant. But I don't take that approach, because Ja Morant is a very, very special player. And watching him play this season, you can see the future is really bright for him. And I was looking at that Hoops Hype article from yesterday, where they talked about the like top guys under 25 to build a team around. And Ja Morant was listed ahead of Zion. And in some vacuum, I can see that. And I don't disagree with it to a degree. So he's a very special player. And I think the future looks pretty bright for the team. I don't think they were as good as their record indicated this season. I think you kind of saw that a little bit in the bubble with some of the play injuries played a part in that too. But overall, like, I would love for a rivalry to develop between these two teams. I think you could conceivably see rivalries amongst all teams in the division with how young some of them are, particularly with, say, the Mavs and Luka Doncic, too, that this is going to be really fun to watch all of these guys play each other four times a year. And with Memphis only being about 5 hours or so away, you know, you have kind of a natural rivalry, not just in terms of players with them being drafted one and two, but also then the proximity of the cities, I think, adds to that. And sometimes it's a lot of fun.
There's a lot of depth to it. And I think that that's a good thing. But I also think, you know, in the NBA, where you've got a lot of personalities and you can, you know, grudges can be held and things like that, I certainly do hope, you know, let the fans, let the media, all that different stuff, let them create the hype of the rivalry. I actually like the fact that Zion and Ja have the background that they do from South Carolina, have the friendship that they seem to have. I think that adds an element to it for sure. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, I'm going to get into the Pelicans offseason with Jake, just kind of looking at how their coaching search and how their roster may form as a result.
It is now officially fall, and likely your family and you have a lot going on now as the world becomes more opened up after what's been, you know, just a crazy year. Kids are back in school, activities are probably ramping up for the fall and winter, and you're constantly on the go. So it's the most inopportune time for there to be issues with your car. Well, of course, as we all know, that's exactly what could happen. And if you're like me, I couldn't tell you how to do your car repairs, but I can tell you where to go to find your car parts, and that's rockauto.com for a variety of reasons. For one, it's very easy to use. Within a few clicks of a button, you'll have what you need and you'll have it on your way. It's also likely to have what you need. The depth of car parts and make and model parts that are at rockauto.com is expansive. It should have what you need. And no matter if you're someone who does your own repairs, if you need someone to do the repairs, or if you do car repairs for others for a living, rockauto.com is a great source to rely on because it's cost effective. This is a family-owned business. They know that car parts and car needs, you know, a lot of times are outside of budget, so they try to keep the costs, you know, as reasonable as possible. If you visit rockauto.com today, let them know that the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts that you will ever need. Visit rockauto.com today.
Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. So, you know, Jake, looking at the Pelicans, so obviously we're now seeing some dominoes start to fall. Billy Donovan has been named the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. I know you talked about that on the Pelicans podcast and also Locked On NBA. Where do the Pelicans stand, and what are you hoping as far as what they are looking at? Is there a candidate that really stands out to you that you hope will take the helm in New Orleans?
So to take the first part of that, they haven't moved the wheels a ton on this. They are taking a very patient approach to going about this head coaching hire, and they know that this is something that is likely going to shape the team for hopefully a decade, 5 years or so at the least, I would assume, that they are not going to be rushed into this just because jobs are filling up and some guys that maybe they like, maybe they don't like that much, are getting snapped up and getting hired for other positions. So they haven't really done interviews yet. They haven't moved along a whole lot, and they're kind of still in the early phase, I think, to the middle of the phase of kind of this process. They've done a lot of their due diligence. They're continuing to do their due diligence, but it's not like they're interviewing tons and tons of guys in a formal setting for this job right now. So it's going to still likely be a while unless they end up meeting with someone that they fall in love with or they end up getting their number one choice. I do think this is one of the more attractive jobs out there on the market right now. I think it's more attractive than the Chicago Bulls. That's not me just being homerish, but when you've got Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, I think that's a little bit better than the Bulls roster. So if they wanted Billy Donovan, I have no doubt that they could have gotten Billy Donovan. So it's kind of telling you that their top targets are all available right now, I think. So they haven't really given any indication on the direction that they want to go with the coaching hire. And I think it's a good time right now to be in the market for a head coach. There are a number of established guys, Ty Lue, Atkinson, depending on how you feel about Jason Kidd, that you can go and get, or you can go with one of the assistant coaches, which, you know, at times seems to be in vogue with a guy like Wes Unseld Jr. or Darvin Ham out of Milwaukee. Those last two names, Ham and Unseld, I think are kind of the top two names on my list. I think Lou would be fine. I think he would be a good head coach. Atkinson, I'm somewhat high on as well, but I think why not bring in a young guy who kind of has that assistant coaching experience in an established organization that's doing well. And I kind of love that kind of approach to it. Bring in a young head coach that can grow with this young team and really connect with them on a level that maybe Alvin Gentry wasn't able to do. And that's the direction that I would personally lean. But right now it could go either way with what the Pelicans are going to do.
You know, the Zion, so obviously, you know, we both were lucky enough to, you know, be fans and cover, you know, very advantageous and just beneficial summers of 2019 with the picks of Zion and Ja, but also seeing our teams really go through the development. For y'all, it was the Anthony Davis trade. For us, it was the Mike Conley trade, obviously. So starting with, you know, kind of going in the tiers of the Pelicans roster, you obviously have Zion, who is a foundational piece. That's the piece that you want to build around. But the development of Brandon Clark, coming back from the health concerns that he had in his last year in L.A. and turning in to that all-star-type self-sufficient scorer that every team would love to have and that the Pelicans are lucky to have found. His contract situation, they believe he's a restricted free agent this summer. So is the plan, you know, no matter who they bring in for Trajan Langdon and David Griffin, my guess is to build around the pair of Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson to lock up Ingram going forward, correct?
Yeah, he's going to get a max deal from the team, and these are the two guys that are untradeable. Everyone else you could probably get for the right deal, the right trade. Those are the two guys who aren't going anywhere.
And I think that that's phenomenal. Like that's another big thing about the Pelicans that, again, a lot of people had talked about with the healthy Zion, they could push for the playoffs and they still had their chance to do that. But I will say this, the development that, you know, I know Alvin Gentry and his staff had something to do with that, but the way that they identified talent last summer through the Davis trade, through the draft, that has to be a big encouraging sign for the Caldwell-Langdon combination leading the front office. Were you surprised at how well the rest of the roster developed this season besides Ingram?
To some degree, I think. I think Ingram becoming the guy that he was, and if you look at his shot profile from his time in LA to this season, it's dramatically different. He became a good three-point shooter because he worked with Fred Vinson, who's one of the assistant coaches here, and is known as kind of one of those like shot whisperer kind of guys who can really help people find their stroke. And that really took Brandon Ingram's game to the next level, and he still has a lot of room to grow. He's really, really good right now. And I think he's maybe playing at like 80%, maybe less than that, 75% of like the player he could be. And so hopefully he'll continue to grow in a way. I think the rest of the roster was a little bit subpar at times. You saw some really good stuff from a guy like Lonzo Ball, but he's kind of one of those players that if he's not in the right situation, I don't know if it's going to work, and I'm kind of iffy on him. His three-point shot really developed. Again, Fred Vinson does wonders with that, to the point where he shot 37.5% on six attempts per game. That's nuts if you watch this guy for 2 years in Los Angeles and how he played. But he's very limited still. So his three-point shooting evolved, but not in the best way, and his game is still very limited in the half court where he's wonderful in transition. He can rebound well for the point guard spot, but once you slow the game down, and you saw the Lakers struggle with this the other night, they're a transition team. When you get them in the half court, they at times are going to give you tons of empty possessions, and that's kind of a problem with Lonzo Ball here too. So he didn't become kind of that aggressive attacking point guard that creates for others like I think a lot of people would have hoped. He puts up good numbers and sometimes disguises the very obvious to me limitations that he has. And so not seeing the growth from him, and he's up for an extension if they want to extend him this offseason, though I don't think they will. That's a little bit of a concern, but there's talent there, and certainly you maybe will be able to see him take that leap and get into that most improved conversation next year. So I think that's where you look at the coaching staff and go, oh, that really would have been nice to see. They've also got a couple of other young guys in Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who's taken at 17, and then Jackson Hayes, who's taken at 8. You saw some good strides from Hayes, I think. He'll be a good 5 in the NBA. He's just got to take a little bit of time to kind of grow into that. Nickeil was up and down. I think that is somewhat concerning, but he's also the 17th overall pick. Like, what are you supposed to kind of expect from a guy like that? So I'll tell you this. I was doing live draft coverage, and at 17, I was screaming, screaming for the Pelicans to take Brandon Clark at that spot. I would have loved that. And I'm not shocked to see how well he played for your Grizzlies this season. So some of the rest of the roster didn't play up to the level that I think they could have and didn't grow like we would have seen. I love Josh Hart and everything he brings, but like Lonzo Ball is kind of the big one to me there that really could have used a little bit more out of him.
And that will be my other question. And now, before we get into the rest of the rookie classes, besides Ja and Zion, your backcourt, obviously, you know, in terms of depth and in terms of, you know, theoretical talent, it certainly has that. But, you know, going into this offseason and especially in the next offseason, you know, you've got Redick, you've got Hart, you've got Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball, all who this year or next year, you know, their contracts are going to be extended in some way, shape, or form. There's also been potential trade rumors out there for a few of them. Do you see there being a big, you know, turnover as far as your backcourt goes? Do you feel Holiday could be traded? Or do you think the Pelicans might like to put some continuity there, especially with Hart and Ball?
So it could go either way. I don't think Ball gets moved because I don't think his trade value is all that high right now. I think he looked better on the Pelicans than he would have maybe on any other team, given how much the Pelicans got out in transition and ran in that Alvin Gentry style of system. He's great in that. But when the game slows down and other teams don't play in transition nearly as much as New Orleans does, a few do, but he wouldn't end up there. But if you don't put him on a transition team, he's going to look bad, I think. And so he probably doesn't have the trade value that we'd like to see to kind of move him. And I'd rather give him another year and see if he does take that next step. In terms of Drew Holiday, it's going to depend if the Pelicans really want to go all in for the playoffs next year, or if they want to try and go a bit more of that teardown route. This kind of goes back to what we talked about in the beginning. Denver kind of did this where they just took incremental steps, kept some of the guys around there that you thought maybe they could have moved and didn't, and just kind of went for it, right? Over time, you know, getting close to the playoffs, then getting into the playoffs, now making this run deep into the playoffs. If they want to go that route, you keep Drew Holiday. If you want to go a bit more of the teardown, acquire some more assets, and maybe align these players' timelines and stages in their career, Drew Holiday's over 30. Zion just turned 20, basically. The rest of the roster is really young. Brandon Ingram's 22. Drew Holiday's not exactly aligned to that in terms of age and growth of those players. So you could conceivably move him, get picks and maybe a young guy or two in that, and just kind of prolong the rebuild, you know, prolong taking the next step a little bit more. I don't necessarily think that that's the way to go. I kind of really like what Denver has done. And at a certain point, just go out and try and win. And maybe you keep Drew Holiday because you can win with all of these guys and, you know, being young and Drew Holiday being at his age. So I think what happens with Drew Holiday will really give us a clear idea of what the Pelicans front office expectations are for next season. Right now, I feel like they'll keep him. There's just so much uncertainty around what the NBA is going to look like in a year or whenever we get basketball back in March after all of this stuff, that I don't think you move him for any reason right now until you kind of have a little bit more certainty on the potential long-term ramifications of that. So I see them keeping him, but as I mentioned to you before, you know, Zion and Ingram are the only guys that aren't that are unattainable off of New Orleans.
We're going to take our final break. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Jake a little bit more about the front court and also, you know, the upcoming offseason. You know, is there any moves that he feels could be made to add talent to New Orleans? So we had mentioned, obviously, Zion, Jake. We also mentioned Jackson Hayes, who I loved watching this season. You know, I understand you wanted Brandon Clark. I was at a draft party myself, and I almost fell to the floor out of excitement when they said we traded up for Brandon Clark. But I think Jackson Hayes, maybe not to the extent of Clark, did well in the role that he played. But you also had Derek Favors. And, of course, Favors is a free agent this upcoming – you know, this offseason. How do you see the front court, evolving? You obviously, you've got Zion and Hayes to build around, but is there a veteran presence who you want to put in the post? Do you want more of a guy of a stretch five or another stretch four? How do you see additions to the front court working out in New Orleans?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question right now. There's a number of different directions that you can kind of go with this. Derek Favors was brought in to kind of play that five so that Zion didn't need to be subjected to that throughout the majority of the season when it was assumed he was going to be healthy all year long. He was okay. I think that's the best way to put it. Defensively, he wasn't exactly what we were hoping he was going to be. Offensively, he's like fine. You know, he's a guy who will give you some points. He's probably going to give you close to 10 and 10 on any given night. that is fine for the right money and in the right role. At big money, which is what he made this year, close to $22 million, like, no, you don't want that. But given that he's a free agent and kind of the type of center that he is, I don't see him getting that kind of contract. Maybe you give him a bit of an overpay to keep him on a 1 or 2 year deal just to have some continuity and to have that defensive presence down low. And, you know, I don't think he was bad on that side of the ball necessarily either, but I don't think he was as good as what we thought he would be coming over from the Utah Jazz and the defensive success that they've had there. You're definitely right about Hayes. Taken at the eighth spot, you know, I don't think he had a ton of expectations put on him coming into the season. And in fact, the Pelicans saw him kind of redshirting this year. This is a guy who's played like 2 or 3 years of organized basketball. He was a football receiver before a big growth spurt kind of pushed him towards basketball. He didn't play a ton of minutes in his lone season at Texas. So he came in really raw. And I think the plan was to put him in the G League for most of the year. But injuries to Derek Favors, injuries to Zion kind of forced him into playing significantly more than they were expecting. He played 64 games, including 14 starts. That was not the plan for him whatsoever. And you know what? He did well enough. I'm not unhappy with how he played. Again, when you have these guys that are so young and so raw, you've got to adjust your expectations for that. And in that case, he was fine. He was not good on the defensive side of the ball really at all, though he shows promise and potential as a rim protector, I think, and as a one-on-one defender at times. But also, he's the eighth overall pick. He was 19 during the season. He shouldn't be good on defense, right? So I don't kind of knock him for that. If he can develop an outside shot, and he's shown flashes of it here and there, he's going to be really good. But just simply as a rim runner, lob threat, and a rim protector, if that's what he grows into, there's a place for those kind of really springy centers like that, I think, in the NBA. Think like a guy like Capella. He's got a role, and Jackson Hayes could easily kind of get to that. And then if he adds an outside shot, pairing him next to Zion Williamson, who showed off at times better ball handling than we were expecting, and same for Hayes too, run a 4-5 pick and roll. You know, you could tell me whichever one's a 4 and whichever one's a 5. It works both ways, I think, eventually. That's going to be a pretty deadly combination. So I'm very high on him going forward. The question is, do you roll the dice with him at center next year, let Derek Favors walk, maybe have a little bit of cap space to shore up, and maybe go out and get another stretch big instead? And I think that's probably the right move, kind of looking at the current NBA, particularly if this team doesn't think they're going to get into the playoffs and they trade Jrue Holiday. Like, throw Jackson Hayes in there, kind of roll with him as best you can, or a rotating cast at center, and use that money better on another position that's maybe going to give you more value and is more just important to a team's overall success. So I could see that happening. They tried pairing Zion with Nicolò Melli, who they brought over from Italy as a 30-year-old rookie this year. It didn't really work out. You know, I think ideally long-term, you can probably play Zion at center, but you definitely need a big who can shoot, and finding one who also defends well is not necessarily the easiest thing. So in the absence of that, the front court is kind of just a weird mismatch of parts till you just kind of settle on what you think's going to work, but they don't have to get this right just yet. But right now I'm kind of inclined to see Favors not come back, use that money elsewhere. But also, maybe they just don't want to subject Zion to a lot more pressure at center. Same for Jackson Hayes. So if they bring Favors back, it's going to be for those reasons, I think.
And the other thing, in terms of, you know, not necessarily the individuals on the roster, but areas of improvement, you know, I think that there are some similarities between the Pelicans and the Grizzlies. They both like to be in transition. They both like to run. They both like fast pace, and they're productive in the paint and the rim. That's just the strengths of their roster, especially their young players right now. But when it comes to it, you know, one thing that the Pelicans do have, the Grizzlies do not. Y'all have that self-sufficient outside source of scoring in Brandon Ingram. That's something the Grizzlies obviously would love to have. But in terms of the Pelicans' next step, what's a trait that you feel they significantly need to get better at? Is it defense? Is it more consistent outside shooting? What area would you like to see them focus on with potential roster additions, you know, this offseason and beyond, Jake?
I'll give you a couple of areas. I think first and foremost, you got to get better on defense. That was rough this year, and you're not going to – you saw how poorly they played in the bubble. You're not going to win games when teams are bombing away open threes against you and making them. And the Pelicans' defense had a good stretch this year where they were ranked in, like, the top 10 for a couple of months. A lot of that was smoke and mirrors and variance and teams just missing wide-open three-point looks from good three-point shooters. So it was a lot of luck that went the Pelicans' way. And in the bubble – it regressed to the mean, and you saw them really struggle on that side of the ball because of that. And then when they're, you know, what's going to kill your transition offense is teams making shots against you. When you're inbounding the ball from under your own net, the opposing defense gets back and gets set, and you can't get out in transition and run. And now the Pelicans have to play in the half court. And that's where their other problem comes from. You can run a lot, but you've also got to have a competent half-court offense. And if you don't have that, you're going to see stretches where you just don't score buckets, and that's going to be a big problem, particularly if you get into the playoffs when the game slows down. They need another creator. I think that's something you've really seen from these teams in the playoffs that are having success. Just playmakers, creators, however you want to kind of do it. A guy who can get his own shot, but being able to do that sets up others for that as well. And having two or three of those guys is really important. You can have it in some sort of combination of Jrue Holiday and Lonzo Ball if you mash them together, but neither of them on their own is that. Ingram shows some flashes of at least being the bucket getter, but being a creator for others, it's just not there yet. And if he grows into that and can maybe become that like secondary ball handler, secondary creator in the half court, watch out, because this team's going to be pretty tough to beat. That's what they really need. Just some guy who's a little more creative, can kind of create for others. Like a Chris Paul type of player is a good example of that. And I wouldn't be opposed for them trying to find some sort of trade where they bring him back to New Orleans. That's, I think, what they're really missing offensively to take their game to the next level.
And Jake, the last question will come to Griffin and Langdon in terms of their avenues to, you know, add talent or assets this offseason. Obviously, with Jrue Holiday, that seems to be the main trade chip and a big offseason storyline with them. You know, what will they do with him? Do you feel that that's going to be the main avenue when it comes to adding talent or, you know, adding assets this offseason? Could you see Griffin and Langdon potentially, you know, have another draft in which they make moves to gain more assets? How active do you think that Griffin and Langdon will be when it comes to trades or adding talent with the assets that they have, you know, going into next season?
It could go either way. You know, they have Jrue Holiday, which is going... Jrue Holiday is like the missing piece for like six teams in the league that elevates them to maybe title favorite. If you put Jrue Holiday on this Nuggets team, they're going to be really, really, really good. Same for the Miami Heat, even though Dragic kind of stepped up and filled a lot of that role. But Jrue Holiday is the missing piece for a number of teams. So if they... It could be a very active trade market from him, particularly because like the free agent class isn't the most exciting we've ever seen. So... because of that, like, yeah, you know, there's going to be offers for Jrue Holiday out there. It's just the question of, do they want to go more towards the playoffs, or do they want to prolong the rebuild a little bit more? And either way you go, is what we said, you know, that'll kind of give you the idea depending on what they do with Holiday. In terms of the draft, you know, 13 is an all right spot to be in this draft. This is a bit of a weak draft. It's not that great, not all that exciting. But if one of those guys that you really like at the top, say a guy like Killian Hayes falls to that 5, 6, 7 spot, I don't think he will. That's a guy that I would go in for and maybe move up for. That's the type of kind of playmaker creator I think that's in this draft that you would really like to add to this team. They have a ton of future Lakers picks coming over from the Anthony Davis trade too. They basically control the Lakers draft between pick swaps and their actual picks every other year for the next decade or so, 7 years. So you have draft capital in future Lakers picks, which on the surface don't seem that appealing, right? They're going to be one of the better teams with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but those picks could outlast LeBron in his career. It goes, you know, when both of those guys are out of contract, including the extension that Davis is going to, or the new contract that Davis is going to sign this offseason. So if you're banking on maybe those picks being very, very valuable in 5 or 6 years, those look like very good trade assets, and maybe that's how you get a deal done as well. I also have like a crap ton of second round picks, which every now and then sweeten things to help you move up a little bit. So I could see them being active in the draft if a guy they really like starts to fall and some teams are willing to move back. So I think everything's on the table as they look to really improve, because they know what they have in Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram and really want to make this a thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'll, you know, end with as far as, you know, the Pelicans go, is that, you know, yes, it is Ingram and of course it's Zion, but, you know, there's a reason why they're there, and there is a reason why, you know, they're, you know, is such an exciting duo, is that they're supported in the front office by Griffin and Langdon, who I'm sure are going to make, you know, a very good hire. You know, we'd love for y'all to hire David Fizdale if you wanted to. You're more than welcome to. You can do that right now, Jake, if you wanted to. But I'm just saying
I'm good. There's a reason I did not mention his name before. before. you know, look, also, I don't think anyone who was going to have any success in New York either. But, like, there's a few guys that I would like to stay away from. He's one of them, though, like, not compared. Like, Jason Kidd is, like, don't even let him in the state to me. This still can come in the state, but maybe not to New Orleans right now.
And that's the thing about the Southwest Division in general. You know, I think, you know, just to be honest, you know, Luka is the premier talent. But I also think that the minds that are with Griffin and Langdon in New Orleans and with, you know, Wexler and Kleiman here, I think there's a lot to like in terms of both Memphis and New Orleans. And I do think that it's going to be quite a rivalry going forward beyond, you know, just obviously the marquee talents that are there. Jake, obviously, I mentioned you do a lot with the Locked On Network. What do you have coming up in Memphis? Obviously, with it being New Orleans, we're going to pay attention. But in general, basketball fans all around, where can folks find you? And do you have any projects coming up that may draw their attention?
Yeah, so, I mean, Locked On Pelicans are covering Zion, and just everything around the league in general is always really fun. And you can find me on the Wednesday episode of the Locked On NBA podcast, which if you're interested in either of these two series, we do a great breakdown of Game 3 and then previewing Game 4, depending on when you're listening to all of this stuff. So it's a lot of fun to kind of be on there. That's it. Just kind of focusing on those things right now. It's been usually, you know, we're just coming out of like a summer hiatus, ramping things back up. But man, between coaching staff, Zion, free agency trades, all of this stuff, there's just a lot going on always. So wherever you get your podcast, you can find that. And then you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Nola Jake.
Again, his name is Jake Madison. Jake, if you'll stick with us for just a second, I can't thank you enough for joining us. As for the Locked On Grizzlies podcast, you can find me at StatsSAC, the show at Locked On Grizz. And just as Jake mentioned, available anywhere podcasts are, especially on the podcast app on your phone. For Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans, my name is Sean Coleman with Locked On Grizzlies. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great afternoon, and we'll see you again here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.